You're listening to A Conduit's Diary, a podcast by me, Rachel, about my life as a conduit. These stories do have cuss words, so be sure to keep the little ears away. And also like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome back to a new season of A Conduit's Diary. Let's get into episode 48, The Enemy. It's been a few months, and as always, life gets in the way. One moment it's spring, then summer, then suddenly Halloween is just a breath away. Between kitten season, the general rush of time, and the sudden bump in weird shit happening in Phoenix, it all got away from me. Then a few weeks ago, I set aside time to record and ended up with a sinus infection that took me out for over a week. Upward and onward. Let's get to it. I left last season with a bit of a cliffhanger, Hema's arch nemesis. If you don't remember episode 47, Through the Static, I'll refresh for you. Eccentric collector with a radio that could hear the other side, including mentions of myself. Weird symbols. She got a radio from a pawn shop in Tucson. The owner, someone I'm all too familiar with. I'll set the stage for you. It's 2010 in our senior year in undergrad. Hema and I are living together in an apartment commonly referred to as Knife Point, a few miles north of campus. Hema liked the location because it was closer to the northern campus and her lab. By this time, it was abundantly clear that Hema was going to be a scientist, and I was going to scrape by with my degree after changing from a Bachelor of Science to a Bachelor of Arts. While I spent all of 100-level biology crying, Hema was explaining proteins and cells and shit like it was the alphabet. Her love of science meshed with her budding love of the occult, which met in the middle to create the woman she is today. By day, she sat in a lab and conducted studies on plants. By evening, she used similar plants in spells and herbal remedies. During this time, we'd made a few other friends. I've always been a solitary creature with one or two close friends. Hema is a bit more like honey, attracting everything within a few mile radius. Unfortunately, she attracted her share of bad actors. Like most arch nemesis origin stories, this one started with friendship. Dana was a grad student who worked in Hema's lab and shared her love for plants. Please don't ask me to describe their research. I couldn't tell you the difference between a monster plant and a jiggle leaf or whatever. They bonded instantly. I don't say this as someone who was jealous, but just as an observation. Dana was always over at our apartment, bringing cuttings of plants and blabbering on about their research. My biggest complaint was that I was left hopelessly out of the conversation and no one wanted to rope me in. Like everything that starts quickly, it ended quickly too. Hema was late working into the night at the lab. According to her, she was on the verge of a breakthrough. It sounded awfully serious for a college-level lab. I was alone, cooking spaghetti or something equally skillful, when Dana knocked on the door. "Oh, hey, Hema's at the lab," I told Dana. "Yes," I answered the door. Video doorbells didn't exist, and we had some ridiculous floral wreath over the peephole. "Oh, hey, Rach. Yeah, I just came by to grab something," she said. Rach? No one called me that, and I nearly told her so, but she was already starting to elbow past me into the living room. "Okay," I said, returning to my spaghetti. Dana was in and out in a minute tops, and it wasn't unusual for her to stop by. I figured it was a going out top or maybe one of their plants. I honestly forgot about her visit until 2 days later when I heard Hema rummaging around her room. When I walked by, I noticed that her clothes were strewn about and every drawer of her dresser was open and emptied onto the bed. "Spring cleaning?" I asked, meaning it as a joke. Hema jumped, clearly unaware that I'd been there. "Just missing something, that's all," Hema said dismissively. Call me a shitty friend, but I didn't think much of it. Have you ever lived with a scientific genius? They are messy people. Hema knows where everything in the apartment is, but that doesn't mean she's clean about it. She has piles of things, drawers filled to the brim of items, of which she knows the exact location of every one. It was only a matter of time before she truly lost something. A few days later, I meant to surprise Hema at the lab with dinner. Takeout, don't get crazy. Because she was working so hard. I was carrying the fragrant pad thai down the hallway when I heard arguing. Being the nosy person I am, I stopped to peer in, surprised to see Hema and Dana having one of those whisper fights you see in the movies. "So you stole it?" Hema asked Dana, her arms flaring for effect. "Steal? It's a plant," Dana shot back. "It belongs in nature. It's supposed to propagate. You can't just..." She trailed off, shaking her head. "You can't just claim it as your own." "I can very much claim it as my own. I bought it from a special source that had used special soil and lighting to enhance its very fucking special properties."
"Okay.
And?" Dana asked, her arms crossed over her chest like a petulant child. "Okay, and? You just walked into my room, took the clipping, and all my notes," Hema seethed. "I thought we were friends," she added.
"It's a plant, Hema. Hardly something to lose a friendship over," Dana retorted.
"No, it's that you went to my apartment when you knew I wasn't there, took something of mine without asking. No, worse than that, you did ask, and I said no until I was done working with it. Then it would have been yours free to do whatever with," Hema said. "But you couldn't wait. You had to swoop in and take it right away once you realized what it could do."
"You're so dramatic," Dana said, taking a step back. Hema took a step toward her.
"Give it back," she said, her voice low.
"Yeah, sure," Dana said, taking another step away. It was clear from her tone that she had no intention of bringing it back to Hema.
"I'm not kidding. I'll call the police," Hema threatened.
"Oh, you'll call the police about a very legal and not at all imported without proper forms plant that went missing from your apartment and some notes about communicating with the dead?" Dana asked. I didn't need to see her face to know she was smirking. Her tone was telling enough.
"You wouldn't dare," Hema started, taking another step toward Dana.
I decided this was the perfect opportunity to come around the corner and run right into Dana, warm pad thai and all. She let out a yelp as we collided, and I tipped the food onto her.
"Oh, stop your judgment. It wasn't even hot anymore."
"Oh, shit. I'm sorry, Dana," I said. I'm a shitty actress, though, and it came off as fake and forced, which Dana noted. She narrowed her eyes at me as the bits of noodles and sauce ran off her and onto the floor.
"How long have you been standing there?" she asked.
"Here? I just came around the corner," I said, which sounded more believable, because it wasn't a lie. Dana just huffed and brushed past me, hitting my shoulder with her own as she did so. Hema glared at me.
"No food in the lab, Rachel. How many times do I have to tell you that?"
"Good Lord, you're grumpy. I just covered her with sauce that will never come out of that awful shirt, and you're going to yell at me for bringing you food?" Hema offered a small smile at that, but I could see her eternal need to follow the rules struggling to break through. "All right, let's clean this up, and then we'll get a fresher meal." It turns out it wasn't just any old plant that Dana had stolen. According to Hema, this was a type of cannabinoid, weed, that had been modified and grown in particular types of soil with the implication that if used, one could commune with the other side.
"Willingly?"
I asked, choking on my food. By now, Hema was well aware of what I could do, but I wasn't aware of her being a banshee yet.
"Yeah, some people want that. They want to talk to their family or lost friends or whatever," she said.
"But that's not likely who will respond," I argued.
"Right, but what if it were a haunting and someone wanted to know why? Or what if they're at someone's grave or..."
"Why would a ghost be at their own grave?" I asked.
"Why wouldn't they?" Hema replied.
"What's so special about a grave? It's dirt and a body. Much more likely to haunt places of importance, like where they died, or an ex-lover, or whatever, I said. Hema considered this, then shrugged. Whatever. It's the implication, a plant that can open your mind to the other side. Some would say if your mind is too open, it'll fall out of your head, I offered. Why are you so opposed to this? Hema asked. The mixture of sleep deprivation and Dana's theft were clearly weighing on my normally chill best friend. I'm not. I think it's cool. I just also think it's dangerous because people are idiots and the other side is opportunistic, I told her. Opportunistic? She echoed. Yeah, like there's enough hauntings and possessions and all that crap without a drug that brings you closer to it. Some doors shouldn't be opened, and some of those doors are super hard to close when opened. Maybe it's a blessing she took the plant, I offered. It's not. She stole it from me and my research. Well, most of it, she said with a sigh. Not all of it? I asked. Hema shook her head, the start of a sly smile pulling at her lips. She thinks it's all of it, but it's not. It didn't end there. Their field is small enough that Hema and Dana would cross paths time and time again. Dana took the plant clipping and made it her all-consuming purpose. She didn't understand why the fragmented research she had wouldn't make the plant work. As the years dragged on, Dana fell out of favor amongst the scientists, while Hema remained well-respected. Dana got caught up in a controversy about a fake study and went from working in labs to working in a lab in her garage. Then, somewhere along the line, she stopped all her research and bought a pawn shop. So maybe it's no longer accurate to refer to Dana as Hema's arch nemesis. It's been years, and while they had plenty of scientific standoffs, the two probably haven't thought of each other in a while. Of course, when Gretchen said she'd got some fucked up radio from a pawn shop in Tucson, my thoughts immediately went to Dana. While Dana was no longer in the scientific world, she was very much in the paranormal world. A few years ago, I saw an ad for a mystic conference, and it had Dana's picture on it, for whatever reason. Despite the years that separated us, I recognized Dana the minute I stepped into her pawn shop. If you know Tucson, you know these types of pawn shops. They sit adjacent to 4th Avenue, where plenty of local bookstores, mystical shops, and bars live. Dana's pawn shop is far enough away to avoid any looky-loos, but close enough to walk to. I parked my car on the street and tried not to get dragged into a wave of nostalgia about places I'd vomited in my youth. 4th Avenue was a favorite of ours, close enough to the main campus, but far away from the more popular Greek bars. The moment I stepped into the pawn shop, I knew something was off. To the ordinary eye, it looked like every other shop in the area. Radios, cameras, firearms, all sorts of random things for sale. I didn't doubt that these were real items brought in by real people looking to make real money. But the true purpose of this place shimmered under the surface. When I walked in, an artificial bell tolled through the speaker system. A woman standing at the counter looked up, her gaze darting away shortly after she made eye contact. She was leaned so far over the counter she was nearly flat on the surface of it. Her voice was low, barely above a whisper, but she was clearly upset. Behind the counter stood Dana. She was taller, nearly 6 foot if you counted her heeled cowboy boots. She wore skin-tight jeans with ripped pockets and a button-up sleeveless blouse with a lot of ruffles across the front of it. Her light brown hair fell in waves around her face, nearly down to the end of her shoulder blades. She had a few gray hairs and some crow's feet, but otherwise, she wasn't much different. Even back in undergrad, she had a sort of cowgirl flair with her outfits, despite never having touched a horse in her life. Dana didn't so much as look in my direction until her conversation with the angry woman ended, by her stomping out of the store, nearly knocking me down in the process. Well, if it isn't Rachel Smith, Dana said, leaning her hip against the counter. Never thought I'd see you poking around here. Her voice took on an overemphasized drawl she never had in undergrad. Call me curious, I replied, taking a slow step into the pawn shop. I wasn't sure how to play this yet, So I had to resist the overwhelming urge I had to just leave. Places like this always made my stomach churn. I could practically feel the grime from the other side on my skin and in my lungs every time I inhaled. Whatever Dana was doing, she was in deep. "Curious?" she asked, quirking a brow. "Maybe you should keep your big nose out of other people's business," she added. "I came to ask about a radio," I said.
"A radio?
You want something older? Something that plays cassettes? Or maybe you've got an old CD you need to listen to. Drives me nuts how they don't have CD players and laptops these days," she said. "We don't own anything anymore. Everything is at the beck and call of another person, another being. If I were to buy an entire album today, it would all be digital, all borrowed. If they decided to close down the app I listened to it on, I'm out of luck. Paid for nothing but to borrow a listen. Doesn't that bother you?"
"It bothers me.
That's why I keep so much of this old stuff. Tangible things. You buy a CD, it's yours, in your hands."
"Until they stop making things to play the CD on," I reminded her. "Then you're no better than the streamers. You're just peddling obsolete technology."
"Sure, but if one breaks, I can go on to another. It doesn't work that way these days. An app breaks, it's all gone, and we all relied on it. Makes me glad that Zahn fellow doesn't get into antiques trade. He'd ruin it all, burn the relics to make way for the new machine overlords."
"I guess some things never change," I said with a sigh, avoiding touching anything.
Who knew what kind of shit she was up to with that awful sensation in the air?
A fan buzzed lazily overhead, moving from side to side to try and circulate the warm air. Whenever it was turned away and quiet, I could hear something on the edges of my ability, almost like I was listening to a concert from underwater. Then the fan would circle back and the sound would disappear.
"How so?" Dana asked,
leaning over the counter toward me. I suppressed the urge to lean away.
"You chasing wild tangents," I said with a shrug.
Dana's eyes narrowed, and she crossed her arms over her chest.
"What do you want, Rachel? Spit it out. I got a business to run and can't spend my days yakking it up with you," she said.
"The radio. You sold it to a woman named Gretchen. Where did you get it?" I asked.
"I don't keep track of everything I get. Just the important things, in case the cops come looking. What does this radio look like?"
She was being coy, and it was annoying me. I pulled out my phone and picked up the photo of the symbol that was etched into the radio.
"This ring any bells?" I asked.
To my surprise, Dana practically ripped my phone from my hands, her eyes widening at it as she looked at the photo.
"No," she said softly, shaking her head. "No, there's no way this was."
She dropped my phone with a clatter onto the glass counter and practically flung herself from behind it. I barely moved out of the way as she barreled through the store, stopping before a locked door with shaking hands as she pulled a key from her pocket and slipped it into the lock. Now, I know I said I didn't want to go any further into the store or touch anything, but come on. If it was a trap, it was a damn good one. So I followed her through the door, which opened to a stairwell to a basement. Basements are not a normal Arizona fixture, so this was a creepy development. Thankfully, it was only a few steps before we were at the bottom, and she began to run headlong to the opposite side of the basement. It was clear this is where she did most of her real business. The room was the origin of the sound from earlier, a steady noise from the other side. It had multiple points of entry, a radio much like the one Gretchen had against the wall, a mirror painted black that showed jolts of color as those on the other side moved in front of it, even what looked like a portal to the other side, the size of a manhole on the ground.
"What the fuck, Dana?"
I whispered, not wanting to draw too much attention to myself. I knew it was a lost cause. The moment I entered the room, I felt them all snap their attention onto me. Dana wasn't listening. She was too busy looking over the shelves shoved against the wall.
"How in the fuck?" she yelled,
her fake drawl gone. Her fingers dug into the shelf and her shoulders slouched as she came to the realization that the radio Gretchen had was, indeed, missing.
"Look, enough of the theatrics," I said, unsure how best to stand in the basement. No matter where I stood, my back was to one of those points of entry to the other side. I was painfully aware of how easy it would be to grab me and drag me through. Could I get out?
Yeah, most likely.
Would it still be terrifying and unnecessary?
You betcha.
Who has the radio? Tell me her name. Give me her address. You said Gretchen? When did she get it?
Dana turned toward me, taking several long strides to confront me. I backed up as quickly as I could, forgetting my previous plan of pretending like she didn't terrify the shit out of me.
Being this close to the other side, with all these artifacts around her,
she was not to be trusted.
Can we get out of this fucking basement? I can barely hear you over...
I waved to the room, motioning to the mirror and the radio. I realized my mistake a beat too late. Dana's eyes widened as she looked over me.
You?
She asked, taking a stumbling step back.
You can... What do they sound like? What are they saying? How did... Who gave it to you?
Give me a name. I have to know.
Gave me what?
I asked, backing my way up the steps. If this was the only way to get out of here, so be it. My head was starting to swim between the noise and the noxious energy in the room.
An amulet, a pass, whatever it is, it's what they give you to help communicate with them, she said,
following me as I continued up the steps.
I have never felt so relieved as I did when my back pressed against the door and we were back onto the main floor.
What in the hell are you talking about? I asked, glad for the sudden shift in the air.
Don't toy with me. You showed up with that symbol and you can hear them. Can you see them? I've heard some of them have amulets that let you have both sight and hearing. Not everyone can handle it, though.
She trailed off, shaking her head.
Listen, Dana, I don't know what the fuck you're mixed up with, but let it go. You have no idea how dangerous this all is. Break the mirror, close the portal, burn the radios, whatever you have to do.
Absolutely not, she said with a laugh, shaking her head.
I've spent years trying to get them to trust me. I've worked my way in deep, and now I'm their collector. I store items of importance and move them to who needs them. I'm so close, Rach, so close to leveling up and getting access.
How did you do it?
Who do you know?
The lost radio was long forgotten. Now she had something else to focus on.
Dana, I swear on everything holy, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Who?
What people?
I thought of the symbol in the woods and on the radio and the ominous feeling of dread I had when I stepped into the building only intensified.
Dana leaned back, her eyes wide. How can you see them? How can you?
She trailed off, and her face changed as a realization struck her.
You're the conduit, she breathed, looking me up and down.
Well, fuck, that's never good.
You're the conduit.
Of course you are. That's just my damned luck. They're looking for you, you know. Everyone is looking for you. And when they come calling, you better answer, she said, shaking her head.
Yeah, so that radio,
I started, trying in vain to get her mind off whatever track she was on.
Fuck the radio. This is more important. I'm calling them and I'm telling them.
I didn't stay to figure out what she meant or who she was calling. I grabbed my phone from off the counter and booked it to my car.
And so starts another season. I got a new microphone, so if things are seeming a little weird, I'm just trying to get used to it. It's supposed to be better quality than the one that I had before, which was a piece of shit. So anyway, we're going to start up this season, and I may do something a little different, but I know if I say it out loud, it won't happen. Kind of like the opposite of manifesting. Sometimes I feel like that's what happens when I say certain things. But look for new episodes at least every other week, and maybe a little bit sooner than that sometimes. Catch you next time.
A Conduit's Diary is created by me, written and produced by me, mixed horribly and edited by me. Cover art created by BMC Design on Fiverr. Music, intro and outro, created by Chris Hornberger.